her that we're ahead of schedule? Did you message Anita that we're ahead?
I can call her.
Okay, I just emailed her, but I don't know if she has that.
Do you want to put us on pause, and we'll take a short break while we're waiting? Okay, well, thank you for coming in this morning. If it's okay with everybody, if this section goes fairly quickly, we can call the fire chief in after this and have it our session with the fire chief before lunch. Is everybody okay with that? Okay. From what I understand, you're going to start with operational?
Yes.
And I'm going to declare a conflict on the operational, so I'll leave the room and I'll pass the chair over to Mayor Lowry.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Right. So welcome, Anita. It's hard to see you
Thank
with the glare.
You.
I don't know if you can see us with the glare.
I can see you.
So we're going to start on the operating side.
Wonderful. Sorry, just one second, Anita. Page 139, tab 17.
Whenever you're ready there.
Wonderful, thank you. I wanted just to give you a brief update of this year. Is that fine first?
Sure.
Our programs were really impacted by COVID, having been closed for 3.5 months, and we opened up in July with smaller than normal numbers due to the cohort sizes of 10, and that's the maximum we could have had in the rooms, and enrollment was down as families were waiting to register to see what was going to happen. In the fall, we're seeing an increase in demand in both of our programs, but school age in particular remains really low, normal than normal years. Many of our families have chosen online learning or do not need care at this time. When you look at the operational budget from 2020 to 21, there is a decrease in revenue due to the fact that we aren't anticipating, due to our wait list and the circumstances, our revenue will be down. Not substantially, but lower than in normal years. We do not have a municipal grant this year, so that does account for some of the revenue. When you look at all the salaries and benefits, it is lower as well by 10%, the reason being that we are meeting our ratios with the teachers and not needing more staff than in previous years. We've included a cook. Hopefully we'll have our Holy Name program up and running and hire a cook mid-year to cook for that location. So that is lower as well. Materials and supplies is a little bit higher, and we can account for that because of the cleaning supplies that we have to bring in. It's substantially higher. In addition, we're looking at higher food costs. We really noticed an increase during COVID as well, and we will have more kids hopefully over at Holy Name. Services and are about the same, and rents, nothing has really increased a lot. We did put a bit of a 2% increase on some lines, I believe, or we reduced the bus line. I guess I kept the same for the other lines. Water's gone up a bit. So with operating budget, it will be lower than 2020 as well. Any questions about that? Yes.
Councilor Ferguson?
Yes, thank you. Could you just go through the salaries and benefit number 8
mm-hmm.
to see a 10% decrease? That's always positive. It's not positive, but by the same token.
Yep.
Can you give me an explanation on that, please?
Okay, we have to keep our ratios at whatever the ministry has
right.
dictated. So I've put in enough teachers to meet the ratios for each program, so it is lower. So for instance, even if you have 15 toddlers, you need 3 teachers. But if you have 12, you still need the three teachers to meet the ratios. So with our numbers down, we're bringing in less revenue, but we still need to keep our salaries. Yeah, and there is also a 3.5 increase, step increases for staff as well.
Okay, thank you. And also on line 15, and I can appreciate obviously your increase in cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an expense that we can write off against COVID expense? I'm assuming
yes.
It is, right?
Yes, there is a provincial grant that
yes.
just came in. I submitted one on Friday, and we recouped all of the costs for September for PPEs, for cleaning supplies as well.
Great.
And that will be ongoing till next year.
Good. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Were there other questions before we move on? Okay.
Thank you. I am recommending a 2% increase to fees across all programs as well for next year. Cost of living increases. We're going to continue to enroll in our preschool and toddler program at 110 Patterson, as that is a new program that we started to get off the ground this year and then COVID hit. As a result of our enrollment, we're continuing to monitor our spending to only the essentials that we would need and to apply for any provincial fundings, as I mentioned, to cover PPE's loss of revenue, as well as staffing that are screening, which are additional costs and cleaning duties. I just wanted to commend the staff who are an amazing group of dedicated ECEs that work really hard to ensure a safe and welcoming space for the children. In addition to supporting positive and responsive interactions, there's an ongoing communication with families about the programs and their children, which is a cornerstone of quality care, especially in this time. So when we review capital expenditures right now,
So capital for the daycare can be found on page.
So if we're going to go 20, to capital, I'm just going to see if Councillor, there he is, okay.
Page 20.
Sure. So CEO Kelly just wanted to make a comment before we move ahead.
Councillor Ferguson's question with regards to the 10% decrease in salary costs. Did that answer your question, Councillor Ferguson?
Yes, yeah.
It did? Okay. So, was there a reason offered? I mean, we're down $200,000, so that is less people and less hours. Was as a result of what reason going into 2021? You said ratios and...
Also less capacity, revenues are decreased, so that's the reason for not needing as many staff.
Right.
You don't have as many children, you don't have as many staff.
Right. So are you clear on that, Councillor Ferguson? So we have less ability to make revenue and less staff coming in.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
No, that's... Yep.
Okay. Short.
Thank you.
Thanks. I wasn't hearing that connection, so I just thought I'd make sure. Thank
yep.
you.
No, thank yep. you. Thank you.
So anything further on the operations side before we go to capital? Okay, come on back.
So with the capital, there are three really important areas that we need to attend to. The first one is the kitchen, and I've increased it by $15,000 from what was last year's because of unanticipated problems we've noticed in the kitchen, and so we've upped it a bit. As well as mechanical assessment, that needs to be conducted early next year, as well as cupboards and replacements in the preschool room. Those are the three priorities. And I've upped the cupboard and storage room by $5,000. May not come to 25, but I've upped it because of the number of issues that I've noticed. So that's the increase.
Mayor Lowry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Anita, I wonder if you can just give us a little bit more information about the problems you're seeing with the kitchen.
We've noticed
this is in the new center?
It's in the old center.
Oh, the old center.
The old center, yeah. There was budgeted $80,000 for completion. Because of COVID, we never got around to getting that completed, of course. Just of recent, underneath the cupboard, we've noticed a lot of rotting wood. We've had to pull it out. We pulled out slabs of rotting wood, which was really unanticipated. So once they remove all that cupboards, I can anticipate there might be some further damage that hasn't been accounted for.
Thank you for the clarification.
Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
Just on mechanical assessment, is there any kind of way...
Microphone, please.
Oh, on mechanical assessment, is there any kind of way that the province can pitch in some money for that? I see it through the county coming through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Are you? Can you access that?
I will look into that with the health and safety person that's helping me with that.
There's quite a bit of money designated to daycare through the county.
Okay.
So I think you should investigate what you can get.
Okay, thank you.
Very important.
Yep, definitely.
Councilor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. On line 99 is the play structure.
Mm-hmm.
Do we share that play structure with the school?
No, that would be our own play structure, but we're actually changing that title for play equipment because play structures aren't really recommended through the ministry anymore. There's a lot of liability issues and safety issues with climbers. Most people are going with natural playgrounds, so we already started initiating some natural play space out there already. So it's our own space, and it won't. We've spent a little bit on that this year. Yeah.
Thank you. And line 101, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I probably am, the kitchen. I thought that we had spent considerable dollars in the kitchen. Was it last year?
That was at probably the other location.
Okay.
That was Holy Name.
So, okay.
Yeah, this is older building.
Yes, right.
Yeah, that kitchen's fine. And that's what we'll be utilizing when we do close this one. We'll have the food transported over.
Right on. Yep, thanks again.
Councillor Holmes.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. Line 96, cupboard and counter replacement. That is other than the kitchen, I take it.
Yes, that's on the second floor of the preschool room. They're really old. They're chipped and falling apart and need to be replaced for safety as well.
And also, just for the kitchen again, in the original daycare, we replaced the countertops on there last year, didn't we?
No, not in the kitchen. Nothing's been replaced at all.
Okay, I thought we'd budgeted for it. I must have not got done.
You're done. Any more questions? Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
If I can get in touch with the Emily Huntington, I'll bring some information forward to you.
Thank you.
And it's just come to light to me over the last few years how important daycare is for our community. So
yes.
Especially since COVID-19.
Yes. Perfect. Thank you.
Any more questions? Councilor Ferguson?
Yes, thank you again. Maybe a more general question.
Mm-hmm.
I know we can't anticipate getting back or when. Do you have any ideas at all when you may be up fully running again? Is there anything?
No.
No.
Okay. I think we're going with speculation. A lot of our parents have said, I'm going to wait till January. I want to play this out. And just in the last week or so, we've been getting a lot of calls about, well, I think I might want to start December and see how it goes. So that's a very positive move. It's our school age program that we are struggling with. We lost over 100 kids since March. And a lot of these kids are being homeschooled. So instead of a room of 30, we might have a room of 15. So
it's
very significant. I mean, it may be better now that the requirements, if a child has a sniffles, are allowed to come back. Maybe that will make a big difference, because we've had to send majority of our kids who get colds for testing, and that parents did not want that to be an ongoing issue. Now we can accept them back with a symptom like that.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Further questions? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll take a recess now until Chief Brown arrives, and once he arrives, we'll get right back at it again. Thank you. We good, Gene? Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order. Morning, Chief Brown.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming a little earlier. And turn on your microphone first, please.
So the operating budget can be found on page 65, tab 11.
So to recap some of the change we see from 2020 to 2021 budget, in remuneration, what we've done is we've assumed 160 incidents. So far this year, we will end up somewhere between 145 and 150 incidents. We know that as people remain home, we're seeing the scale and severity of the incidents increase. So we're planning on 160 incidents next year. Also planning on 72 hours of training per firefighter in to accommodate the promotional scale that was presented to council and approved earlier this year. We've also increased courses and development to 12 Ontario Fire College courses that will allow us to build out our management. Excuse me. I feel like I had to sneeze. So the course development basically is to ensure that we put the proper supervision and the proper knowledge throughout the organization and build the resilience and capacity that we need to ensure long-term sustainability. I've also added smoke alarm program in there, which does come at a little bit of a cost. That cost premium is to ensure that we can meet the objectives of the FPPA and become compliant with a proper smoke alarm program, and will allow us to actually measure the efficiency and effectiveness of the program to assess compliance across the municipality and ensure that all of our residents are protected from fire and the effects of carbon monoxide. I've also included some medical training in there as we start to develop and build out our ranks. Our two-year certifications are already up, and we need to start to be proactive and ensure that we have the proper medical training to protect both the firefighters and the public from adverse effects to medical conditions. So there's the changes that we've done in remuneration. Equipment and rentals, you'll see that the cost... Oh.
Thank
you. Chief, can you break down that $200,000 change? Is it well spread across the training and the programs that you've listed, or is there one that's taking more of the pie? Just to get a sense of how that lies.
So to help out with the actual cost breakdown, the cost of 160 incidents with an assumption of 50% of the staff that responds equates to a little over $158,000. Okay. The cost to do the training to maintain the skills and assets that we have in our firefighters is an additional $95,000. The cost of the smoke alarm program is estimated to be around $10,000. The course development to ensure the proper supervision under the Health and Safety Act is $13,000. And the medical training is assumed to be about $6,000. Those are just rounded numbers.
Perfect. Thank you for that.
The next line item that we had in our budget was equipment rentals and other. You'll see that there is a change. This is simply as a result of aligning our budget from previous years. We've had a number of different equipment and rentals placed in various accounts. All that we've done is taking all of the existing equipment and rentals and placed them all into one account so that we can better manage and track our expenditures as it relates to equipment rentals and others. And for example, typically in here is our photocopier, our copier usage, our phone system maintenance, and our rugs and stuff like that. So this is just a realignment of what should have been done in the past and making sure that all of it is captured in the proper location. The next big expenditure, any questions on that? The next expenditures that we had was miscellaneous equipment expense. This is everything from filling air bottles to maintaining some of our equipment, miscellaneous tool replacement stuff. In here, I have added some dollars as it relates to small engines, so all of our generators and all of our hand tools and all of that stuff is long past due as it relates to maintenance and ongoing servicing, so there's money in there for that. We've also added in some medical supplies and our personal protective equipment supplies. As you can appreciate, all of the costs as it relates to all of our medical supplies is now significantly increased as well. And this also covers off everything from our washing our, all of our personal protective equipment and ensuring that we have all of the necessary decon. As it relates to this budget, $10,000 in this budget is allocated to decontamination. As I've stated to council in previous reports, decontamination is one of the highlights for fire services across Ontario as it relates to the Ministry of Labor. So we have started a committee and are moving forward with committee recommendations on ensuring that we have the proper equipment, proper techniques, and the proper ability to protect our workers from particulates and hazardous environments to the best of our ability. And the $10,000 will be shared across the different range of different initiatives that we've identified as sort of our first steps in ensuring overall health and safety of our members. Communications, one of the things that we did this year, we did overspend our budget this year. We've had significant issues with our radio network system. Unfortunately, most of them related to our own operations. So we've serviced all of our radios and have taken steps to ensure that emergency communications are maintained. We also had the county radio infrastructure group attend the municipality and do radio testing across our fleet to ensure that there's nothing system-wise with access of our radios onto our radio network. In that, we've also identified that we are transitioning to sort of a future non-proprietary digital radio replacement. All of our radios are significantly old, so we're trying to replace a few more. And we are now at a point where we no longer have pagers, so we have firefighters taking portable radios to use as pagers with their phone app because we don't have pagers within our system. So we're looking to purchase additional pagers so that we can have a proper distribution and notification for our firefighters. Contract fees. Again, throughout the alignment of our budget, we've moved some stuff in and out of other accounts to align everything into a single account that will allow us to do better tracking on contract fees. The only changes that are in here that is a new cost is it's called a Fire Department Learning Management System, which is an online training platform that costs about $7,500 per year for 50 firefighters. This allows us to continue to do firefighter training from a distance, and then when we do get together, now they can do online, prepare for whatever our training sessions are. We can break down into smaller groups so we're not exposing all of our firefighters to any potential risks, and allows us to maintain everything that we need to do to maintain our skill sets, but in smaller groups over a longer period of time. So this is a fantastic tool to help us continue with our operations and of course be operationally ready for anything that we have to do. Next was contract repairs and maintenance. There are a couple of changes within this particular account. Again, we've streamlined some stuff, but some of the highlights that we need to reflect on are this coming season, we do have snow removal needs. The individual that was very supportive in shoveling the doors and walkways and stuff as part of a morning routine, is going to retire from our fire service this year, and we will lose that asset and not have a replacement for simple things that we're getting done around the hall based on his willingness to help us out. So we've added some snow removal budget within this framework for the Almont Station, as well as in previous years, we did spend money on cutting the grass out around the training center, especially as it related to wild parsnip. This year, we have chosen not to because we have not been able to use the facility as much as we had hoped based on all the limitations around the training that we've done. So we've limited our training to different areas and different needs to ensure our operational readiness. So next year we are planning on doing some grass cutting, and obviously we'd like to get back into our training center as soon as we can to promote the growth and development of our firefighters. The only other thing is we did add additional money into the heating and cooling. As the seasons change, we do want our filters and everything maintained a little more than what was done. To my knowledge, we didn't spend, or we haven't been maintaining our heating system to the full aspect of what it was supposed to be. So we have spent money in that area and plan on ensuring the overall maintenance within the building. All the rest of it falls down to general repairs and maintenance that is normal and ongoing for both stations. That captures the bulk of the changes throughout the operational budget changes for the 2021 proposal. Move on to capital.
Councilor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. Line one, the salaries, and you did explain the breakdown for it. How many dollars would be attached to that for the hopefully successful recruitment you're doing as far as additional salaries for the new recruits?
So the pay rate on average for a brand new recruit, I believe, to be $17 an hour. And to go through the original program for firefighter level one that would be required before we would allow them to respond to an incident would be 40 hours per firefighter. And on top of that, at $17 an hour, and then once they have attained the firefighter one, I believe their rate would go up to about $19 an hour.
And how many are we looking for, or are you looking for, rather?
Right now, based on the retirements that we've had and the anticipated retirements that we have through the end of the year, we are looking to get a minimum 6 to a maximum of 8. And last year we had 6 applications, and this year we exceeded, I believe, the number to be 36 or 38 applications of some pretty highly qualified individuals. So.
Good, thank you.
We're trending in the right direction.
Yeah, right.
Any further questions before we move into the capital? Deputy Mayor Minnelli?
I'm sure you've had a chance to really look at this budget. You've when I look at something, I see 229% increase. I think it's unrealistic. I don't even know if I should comment on some of this stuff, and especially when we get to the other part of the budget. I don't know what to say. It's 88% increase.
Yeah.
On capital, or on operating. I don't know.
Carry on.
I'm not really happy with it. That's all I can say.
So, as a reminder, there are things within the miscellaneous equipment expenses that were rerouted out of other accounts. So you'll see that some of the accounts, such as the two accounts above, are at minus 50%. That's because some of the values that have been moved around for proper cost accounting within each of the different budget areas are better aligned for long-term tracking of what we're doing.
Okay, you move ahead to capital. What page?
The capital can be found on page 18, starting on line 18.
Thank you.
So, starting with the capital budget, windows for station 2, we can actually remove this from the budget. The windows at station 2 are currently planned for replacement and being handled out of my 2020 budget, and the capital money for the window project is not going to be required moving forward. Item 2 for capital budget, remove portion of block wall, was a carryover from the previous year. Again, I'm going to recommend that we remove this one from the budget and that it gets combined with another capital project down below, so it's not a duplication. So if we could remove the first two items. Door repairs for station 1 and station 2 are just ongoing from time to time based on the usage. We have different mechanisms that need to be replaced. These are the coated doors that we have on the building. So we would be replacing the lock sets as required on the stations. And last year we did one, and it's anticipated that we may have two more that are left to do. Thermal imaging cameras. Current technology is more than 10 years old. Like everything in the fire service, there is a shelf life on most things. Although the thermal imaging cameras still work, the technology of the camera itself is quite old. And in through natural selection, our cameras are somewhere around 13 years old as of this year. So looking to replace our thermal imaging cameras at a cost of $15,000 will...
How many cameras does that include?
Two.
Okay.
That is two cameras. And both cameras, one in Pakenham, one in Elmont. And of course, that would also standardize the cameras between both facilities. We would not buy different cameras based on the location. And then it also supports the training program that would be necessary for their use throughout the system. Water rescue suits. After doing water rescue training in the spring, a couple of our suits are in current need of repair. And if the repairs can't be done on the one suit based on the whole location, then a replacement. The anticipated cost of a replacement and repair is about $3,000 for our current suits. Our command trailer update, we've actually started to reflect on what we're doing with our trailer and have lowered the amount based on some of the realities and challenges that we currently have within the existing fleet and our operations. So what we're looking at doing is taking $2,000 and actually using it to supply the decontamination equipment and using the trailer to move all of the decontamination product from the fire station to the scene, and allows us to set up an on-scene decontamination so that we're not transporting any kind of contaminated goods in any fire apparatus or on any person as it relates from a fire scene back to the fire hall and through the overall cleanup after a fire has occurred. So the $2,000 will be used to basically change some of the interior of the trailer by building shelves and different things internally so that we can increase our operational effectiveness. Cost of $25,000 for medical equipment. Currently, our medical equipment is well past its due date and well past its prime, especially as it relates to everything from simple oxygen therapy or standardized med bags. We currently do not have standardized med bags. I'm sorry, was there a question?
You can finish your comment and then Councilor Gerard. Okay.
So everything from ensuring that we have standardized medical bags that would be consistent to the county EMS program, and ensuring our firefighters have the same type of technology, since we do similar medical training as it relates to first responder and O2 therapy. So those costs are embedded into our medical equipment in the capital budget.
Councillor Dryden.
Thank you. So is this for medical equipment or medical training?
This is all medical equipment.
And so are we saying then that our fire department is actually going to be the ones doing the medical attending, or would there still be a paramedic being called in?
Oh, there would always be a paramedic being called in, and currently under the establishing regulating bylaw that was passed last June, emergency medical services is a core service in that bylaw that says that we do provide medical services to our residents.
So I'm not sure for $25,000 what we're going to be bringing forward for our fire department to become medically helping with.
So the $25,000 is basically broken into completely outfitted medical bags times three because of the apparatus and the response that we do, and O2 therapy times three. So it's basically taking everything and putting in a proper medical program. For example, the O2 dispenser that's currently in Packingham is so old that frankly I don't even think we can even use it anymore. So we're at a point where, again, in order for us to provide medical services as listed in the bylaw, we need to invest in this program to ensure that we have the overall service.
I guess my fear is that though we're doing safety or the medical side of it, I guess I'm still confused as to the costs that, like, $25,000 is a lot of medical supplies then. How many times have we required medical supplies in the last year?
Every single event that we have the potential for a medical response based on firefighter care and responsibility. And to the public, we have had about a half a dozen medical responses so far this year.
And so our fire department were the ones who are doing the medical?
We were requested to attend for a medical, so we may have either got there and performed some medical, or we may not have, depending on the patient outcome.
Okay. I find that a little bit steep, because I'm thinking that when the phone call comes in to the fire department, it also goes to the paramedics, I believe. So
that is correct.
$25,000 for us to assume that our fire department is going to be looking after the medical is sort of doing two sides, is it not? Like, the paramedics are there.
Yes, and we've also, through bylaw, indicated that it's a service that we provide. So as part of the review of that service, there are certain elements and equipment that we need to replace due to age and deficiency to offer that level of service.
Thank you.
So what you're saying is the bylaw has been passed. This is what you need to provide to that bylaw.
That is correct. As far as the value goes, we've taken a best effort on the cost at the $25,000. Obviously, if there was an ability to reduce that cost, I can assure you that that's what we would do. But everything right now, based on the assessment of what we currently have and what we need to do to actually offer the service, requires a significant amount of update.
Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
I kind of thought that this bylaw was turned down. I guess it's just because I spoke against it. it's coming. Cost wasn't mentioned when the bylaw was put forward to us at the table. It mentioned a few extra hours, but there was no cost put with the bylaw, which we can always rescind if we want, right? We can rescind the bylaw, right, after 12 months?
It's always within council's purview to amend a bylaw. I think legislatively and legally we are required to have a bylaw of that nature in effect. But as always, council's able to ask staff to review it more to make amendments to that bylaw, but you do need to have a fire protection bylaw in place.
Councillor Holmes.
Thank you. I think that when I looked at this, need for some medical equipment, I think you're really referring to defibrillators, O2, maybe, some type of pressure bandage, a backboard for first responders as much as anything. And I do think that there is a responsibility to equip our fire department to do that basic life-saving. And if I think of O2, what happens if a fireman falls at the scene of a fire and needs some help? So I think we need to be careful in being too stringent in what we don't want them to have. And I do know that equipment is very expensive. Even to replace the equipment that you use, the electrodes and stuff, is expensive. So I don't really see, you might be able to save a few better money, but I think, if I think of our situation a couple of years ago at Clayton, we were really happy to see the fire department show up with their defibrillators and help to help us with that situation. And, paramedics weren't there before the fire department. Thank you.
Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. How receptive would be the paramedic service to replenish the medical bag, since we are actually providing or assisting them with a great deal of service that, should we or shouldn't we be? That's another question. But are they receptive to providing any type of funding specifically to enhance the medical bags or provide us with the necessary equipments for those?
From my experience, most emergency medical services do not support the fire service with any equipment or anything. What they do provide is assistance in ensuring that we align our medical supplies and our medical equipment to be similar to theirs, so that while we're on scene, as we transition from our equipment to their equipment, there's a standardization and we don't have to basically go through and repackage an entire patient based on different levels of equipment.
Good, thank you.
Mayor Lowry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I realize it was before your time, Chief. It was the interim chief, Chief Guybrison, who brought this forward last spring. I wonder if perhaps that information could be recirculated, and maybe I should be actually looking to you guys if that should be recirculated, because it was something we had quite a lot of discussion about. And I think Deputy Mayor Minnelli is correct. Like it wasn't unanimous, but we did decide on what our core services would be. And I've just pulled up part of what that discussion was about, and it did include discussion on funding and both training and the delivery of that tiered medical response, and what that wasn't going to be without cost. But maybe it would be helpful if that got recirculated, because it's been a long year. The year, it feels like it's lasted for a few years. And maybe that would be something that we can just refresh ourselves on. And now that we have a chief who is our chief, it's not the interim chief, perhaps that would be a good thing for us to just review with yourself at some point, because it was sort of one of the last things that Chief Guybrison helped us out with. But when things get passed off, sometimes the full discussions don't stay with us. So I'm thinking that might be helpful to what we're looking at here with the budget.
Thank you. Okay, you want to carry on?
Fall arrest equipment. Anytime any worker in Ontario works at heights, they have to have the necessary fall restraint equipment. As you can imagine, any time we have aerial operations occurring, whether it's for training or for an incident, we require fall arrest as part of that program. All of our fall arrest equipment is what I'll call the 1980s belt with a loop on it, and does not meet any of the current occupational health and safety standards. So therefore, we need to remove them from service and actually have the proper fall arrest equipment put in place so that we can work off the end of our aerial. One-ton tow truck. This is for the utility trailer and a replacement of the bush truck in Elmont. It was pushed over from last year. The vehicle is limited to a full water tank and three firefighters in a four-person cab, strictly because it's not sized for the proper job. The comment earlier today about buying the cheaper vehicle was an indication that we have with this particular equipment. It's been repurposed a number of times. I do recommend that this vehicle be repackaged and kept on and not replaced for this year in anticipation of the next vehicle replacement, which is the fire truck or the actual brush truck in Pakenham. And the reason is that although this truck does have limitations as it relates to the gross vehicle weight and us not legally being allowed to exceed the gross vehicle weight, the brush truck in Pakenham is a much more important piece of apparatus, which will allow us to A, transport more people, and B, offer a line of service as it relates to brush fires and small, anything from a grass fire to a dumpster fire to any type of vehicle fire. We're going to increase our ability and our capability with the equipment within the existing framework of the portfolio. And in doing that, have less requirement on the actual vehicle out of the Elmont station. So although we do eventually need to replace the truck in Elmont with a proper piece of apparatus that has the proper rating to tow stuff and to actually perform what it needs to do, my recommendation is to move to the brush fire truck for Pakenham. The cost on the brush fire truck in Pakenham is estimated at $220,000, which I will agree does appear to be high at this point. However, in saying that, the American dollar is influencing the $220,000 price tag that is on that vehicle, as we have not really been able to find a Canadian manufacturer to offer the same thing in Canadian dollars. This is not a fancy truck. This is an F-550 four-door cab, so we can transport four firefighters to do basic firefighting things in a flat deck 400-gallon tank with the necessary firefighting equipment on the back. Nothing fancy. The reason for the cost is the American dollar, and as I stated, to date we have not been able to find somebody to basically take an F-550, plunk a platform onto the back of it and turn it into the truck that would provide us with superior capabilities as it relates to not only brush fires but any type of small fire.
Councillor Dredd.
Yes, thank you. Once again, I realize that this is a what if, but how many times has the brush truck been required in the last year?
So these vehicles are used pretty much in Pakenham. I would say that the brush truck is used a significant amount of time, not necessarily for brush fires. It is an apparatus that we have to have response so that we can transport firefighters from the fire hall to the fire scene. So the brush truck is used fairly often. As far as total grass fires, I don't recall off the top of my head. The council report that came forward about a month ago did have the breakdown of the incidents, and I believe brush fires was one of the higher responses required by the fire department.
So the truck that you're referring to is basically to transport the firemen?
The brush truck that I'm proposing, rather than just being a truck that has a tank on the back of it that we can pump water from and transport two people, is a truck that has four doors and a tank on the back that will become more versatile than a one application truck.
Okay. Thank you.
Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
Yes, I'd just like to know at what point, when there is a brush fire, does the Ministry of Environment or any other provincial ministries get involved? Right away or?
So in the case of the municipal lands, if we had a brush fire of significant size, we could make the request of the Ministry of Natural Resources through our arrangement with them, but we would also be at cost for whatever the cost of whatever they sent to us would be.
So basically we rent their equipment when we need it?
If it's available to, yes.
Okay. Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. Yep. That answered one of my questions, the availability of M&R and the timing of their availability. And then the second one is the transportation of this vehicle, as you stated, is primary purpose for transportation. The existing side-by-side that we have that was to replace, or did replace rather, our aging bush truck at that time, how effective is that as far as transportation? I realize it's probably limited in its operation, but how effective is that in the transportation aspect of it? And is it possible that a additional trailer for water, that type of thing, could be attached to it as far as transporting, or no?
So the first answer is that the side-by-side that was purchased for brush fire capabilities has not panned out to be the most effective apparatus as it relates to fighting brush fires. It's my understanding that that the last brush fire that apparatus did attend, basically it does not have enough ground clearance and couldn't make it into the bush where the fire was, and it ended up getting parked. So overall effectiveness of the equipment to date has not been, it's not a well utilized apparatus based on its current limitations.
Go ahead.
The availability of a new bush truck, as you say, is limited. Is there any trucks out there that can be converted over? And I realize there's always issues with conversions, but is there something that could be used and converted over as opposed to new?
I personally have not explored that as an option based on for a number of reasons, based on the cost of used vehicles. Anything that's four-wheel drive tends to be going to the States because there's a 35% premium on the value of the vehicle. So the vehicle supply market is an influence on the overall direction, which also affects the price versus new. So again, on a cursory overview, we're trying to align sort of a very stock reasonable apparatus into a more versatile piece of equipment to replace the one in Pakenham, and then utilizing components from the stuff that's on the truck in Pakenham currently into the existing apparatus in Elmont to ensure that we have the capabilities in both locations, understanding that the Elmont one is, it will be a much reduced operational dependency than the new one that would be in Pakenham.
Go ahead.
Do we have any assistance from the county specifically to that, since there is some acreage owned by the county within Pakenham Mountains, that type of thing? Is there any assistance we could look to there?
To my knowledge, unfortunately, we're the only emergency services that is 100% funded and delivered by municipal council. Other than taxation and fee-for-service and cost recovery, I have no other mechanism to generate revenue that would assist in this process.
Okay. Councillor Holmes.
Thank you. So is taking on the extra service of servicing the White Lake area for another municipality have any bearing on having to purchase another truck for the Pakenham area, the fire truck?
No, absolutely in no way. As a matter of fact, in the anticipated agreement, we have been clear in which apparatus we would send over there. The brush truck to date I don't recall it being one of the more common ones. And the reason is that if we send an apparatus over, we are looking at it that if the call was of significant nature and rolled over into mutual aid, what would they require under mutual aid as a response to support their ongoing emergency? And remember, we're not replacing their fire department. We're only supplementing their initial response so that they can have their fire service still attend, just coming from further distance. So as a result of that, operationally, different trucks will be used based on different incidents. And then if the truck was required to be there, it would be the proper apparatus for ongoing operations to support whatever they require. So in other words, we're not going to respond over there and then have to drive all the way back to Pakenham to get the right truck to drive all the way back to help them long term. So I don't believe that this truck bears any decision in what we're trying to do. What we are trying to do is increase our capability for everything across the board, not just brush fires. So taking the tank and the proper hose and the proper equipment on the back of the truck, which is again a very standardized say F550 platform with an aluminum deck that gets bolted onto the back of it with some cabinets so we can put equipment into it. This is nothing that's going to be overly fancy, but it will allow us to increase our capability. So if we had a car fire, we could actually put a car fire out with our brush truck rather than having a plastic tank on the back of a truck with limited ability to actually flow water.
I have a question for you. Is the difficulty getting the F550 in Canada or the apparatus in Canada or both?
The actual manufacturer is somebody that put together a simple package that we're looking for. There are many manufacturers out there for fire apparatus, but they tend to want to, I'm going to say, overscale the apparatus and put together a truck that has even more purpose. We're trying to take something instead of spending $350,000, pare it down into something that is a lot more cost effective and still increase our firefighting capabilities within that platform. The difficulty is, again, because all the manufacturers currently manufacture equipment that is much higher in cost, that's not the direction that we want to go. So we have not currently identified a Canadian manufacturer that will meet that reduced platform to get us the apparatus that we would benefit from the most.
Do you have a ballpark for just a bare truck?
I do not, no. I figured it would, an F550 four-door with no box would likely come in at about $100,000 mark. And it is my understanding right now, I'm using Ford as an example, through some quick preliminary research, if we order the truck as the municipality also gets a rebate from Ford through a rebate program that we would then be able to take and apply to the cost. But with not having a Canadian supplier, are we prepared to buy the truck, figure out where it has to go, and then do all of the final assembly on all of the equipment to make it into the apparatus that we require?
Okay, thank you.
So,
Councilor Ferguson.
Thank you. Does M&R have the same type of moving stock as that? Do they have a comparable unit, do you know, that's available out of Pembroke or wherever M&R would float their product in
from? I have no knowledge of what the M&R has. In the area in the area that we have in our municipality that is governed by the province, so there was a brush fire there, I believe it was last year, on one of the islands that falls within Mississippi Mills. We did attend that particular incident, and we did have challenges as we don't have boats to get to islands that are on fire. And my understanding is that the M&R basically brought in a helicopter, dropped a couple of people, and they did what they needed to do. So as far as what they have for equipment and fleet, I honestly have no idea.
Okay, and carry on.
So in moving forward with my recommendation, I have two additional points. If we remove the tow vehicle from the Almont station, we do need to service the existing equipment. 581 does have an electrical issue that causes the battery to go dead at least weekly. So we have a little bit of a routine maintenance program where we have to go out and charge the battery to make sure the truck will start. So we would need a couple of $1,000 in our maintenance budget on it by the removal of its replacement to ensure that we can fix our electrical issues and the truck will start when it's required. And my second point would be if we, if council was so to look to the replacement of the Pakenham truck, I would like to move forward as soon as possible at speccing a truck and identifying a Canadian supplier so that we can firm up this number with the eventual goal of having the truck actually here in April when it would be required for grass fire and brush fire season. Next on the list is seven garage doors for station one at a cost of $21,500. When the fire station was built and spec'd, the garage doors that went into the building have a glass panel about the third panel up. All of the doors in the station, with the exception of one that has been replaced, has a glass system in it that is no longer manufactured because over time the flex of the door, especially in the up position, causes the frame rails to crack and eventually the glass to fall out and potentially injure somebody underneath or land on our apparatus. We have taken the steps this year to silicone in the windows to try to prevent them from popping out, but all of these panels do require replacement and it does pose as a health and safety risk to the people in the department.
Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
You know you can buy single panels for doors, eh?
The cost of the single panels from the door manufacturer.
Seven single panels is $21,000.
That is correct.
Maybe.
And that would be our plan, is to actually, if labor costs, it's actually cheaper to replace the whole panel. Training center work for $10,000. This is us seeking to improve the training center with increased leveling of the grounds and adding some lighting for nighttime operations. It's not a high priority item, but should be addressed at some point. Station repairs, office wall removal, inspection and repairs. Recently learned that we have a cistern under the apparatus bay floors in the Pakenham station. That cistern is leaking and going off site with all of the water that's in it. The cistern is used basically to hold water so that they can fill fire trucks and do different things at that particular, out of that particular reservoir, as there is no hydrants or anything in Pakenham. The cistern is leaking at a rate that is enough that we have to use our existing well to fill the cistern, and in so we also use it for pump training and different things, so we recirculate different water throughout the cistern and keep the water moving. Second problem that we have is behind the apparatus, the tanker, there's about an inch between the rear deck of the tanker and the brick wall that's currently there. It is a significant pinch point and significant issue as it relates to our policy where we require people to back up our trucks, and we don't want anybody getting pinched into the wall because we know that that would create a critical incident and would have to be reported. So there is a health and safety element to this particular setup in this bay. I understand that when the fire station was done back, I guess, about 15 years ago, I'm not sure how some of the stuff was not identified as being a concern, but it certainly is definitely a concern as it relates to the overall effectiveness of the use of our apparatus bay and our current equipment. The removal of the wall means that we...
Oh. Councillor Gerard, you had a question there?
Actually, yeah, it was with regards to the wall removal. Is that in Station 2? That's in Pakenham?
Correct.
And is that not the one that was also mentioned in line 19?
It was. And we went from the $5,000 was to remove all of the electrical and different stuff off of the wall in preparation for it to be removed. And my understanding was is that without any kind of permit or anything, we were just going to take a wall down and make it right.
And
or permission.
And with regards to, so the office wall or office, is that in Station 2 or Station 1?
Station 2. This is all in Station 2. So the training room and the kitchen and everything at the back, by removing the brick wall, the issue is that we run into building code compliance at the same time. So the removal of the brick wall means that we have to have a proper fire separation and we have to have the proper permits and the proper design to remove the wall so that we can actually get the room in the apparatus bay that's required and ensure the overall compliance with all of the rest of the regulations are achieved throughout this process. So it's not as simple, we're just gonna go in on a weekend and take the wall out as originally perhaps planned. But there is a lot more encompassing steps that have to occur within this plan.
Would we be able to get a breakdown of that? Because that $95,000 seems like, $94,000 seems like an awful lot to remove a cinder block wall.
Absolutely. And working with the facilities coordinator, we did come up with the value based on the $94,000. Based on the scope of the work that would be required. And it is recommended that we get an engineering analysis done of both the cistern to find out why we're leaking and to assess the floor structure, because we do park apparatus on top of the floor above the cistern, and to assess what would be required with the removal of the block wall, which we know is non-structural, and achieve compliance with the rest of the building.
Go ahead.
So going back to the cistern, is there what would be the cost to put in a dry well in Pakenham so that the water could be taken from the river instead of from water being held underneath the building itself?
I'm not sure what that cost would be or if we could get the permit to take the water that would be required.
Okay. Councillor Ferguson.
The existing dry hydrant that's there now in the river, and I guess to extend the question there, what's the value of a cistern now? Like at one time, it obviously was very valuable, but are we still getting into a continual problem with having a cistern under the floor, as you've stated now? And is there an opportunity to install another hydrant someplace that would alleviate the need for the existing cistern and or a new one?
So my understanding is they use the cistern more in the winter due to access and to basically the snow removal around the dry hydrant. So as a result of that, they use the cistern to take water and fill their apparatus when they get back to the station. As far as the overall assessment, until we have an engineered report to tell us the state of the building, it's really difficult to answer what the steps are or what the cause of the leak is that's causing all of the problem.
Thank you.
Good.
Hose and appliance. I hate to say it, but I feel sometimes that we've come to the point that we're a one-trick pony. In the case of any kind of incident now, we are actually at a point where we do not have enough hose to actually restock our fire apparatus with the leftover hose that's there. We have no spare hose. We have very limited ability to refit our trucks after incidents. We kind of move some stuff around as required, but we're at a point now where we have to start to purchase some hose and start doing some planning throughout the process to ensure sustainability of service beyond the first call. This past month, we've been running water shuttle and ensuring that we have water capabilities, especially as it relates to all of our rural lands. Yes, it's really nice to be able to pull up to a nice hydrant downtown and have all the water that you want, but that's not the reality of where most of our fires occur. Most of our fires occur in our rural area. And rural firefighting operations requires A, a lot of hose, and B, a lot of ability to move water and to get water on a fire. So throughout the practice of this, we've identified apparatus that don't have the capabilities to actually pump and fill trucks as required in a off of a rural dry hydrant. And the cost of the hoses and appliances will basically ensure that we can start to replenish some of our hose, replace the stuff that we've thrown out due to hose testing, and start to move us in the direction to ensure we have a proper valve on a truck and to ensure that we have enough hose in the system, whether it be forestry hose, regular firefighting hose, or any of the above. Frankly, we don't have hardly anything as spare currently in either station for ongoing operations.
How much hose does $25,000 provide us?
Between the valves, the hoses, and a couple of nozzles, that will get us, we're planning on doing two hose beds per apparatus. So that will get us, I don't know how many feet that would be off the top of my head. It would start us in a direction where we're not replacing everything on all trucks. We are replacing enough on our frontline trucks so that when we pull the hose, we have the properly fit hose with proper nozzles. And then the stuff that's currently in the beds after testing would be the restocking. We're not looking to have a whole bunch of purchase to lay around. We're trying to stage everything in and ensure that we have all of the equipment. For example, the $25,000 also goes to what they call a low-level strainer. I don't know if anybody saw us, but we were at the fairgrounds for a couple of nights, actually shuttling water around the fairgrounds just to test our water capabilities. We don't have the proper strainer to actually pull water out of the river based on the depth of the water at the boat launch. So we ended up with gravel in our trucks and a whole bunch of other things. These are the things that should be basic that we're trying to put in place to ensure that we can have the proper efficient operations so that we can provide the service that the public would expect.
Thank you. Okay.
Bunker gear and helmets. This was an increase based on some of the other realities. Structural firefighting protective equipment is obviously very costly. What we're looking to do is we're looking to increase from 4 firefighters to 7 firefighters for replacement gear on a go-forward basis every year. Bunker gear is only good for 10 years. In a 10-year, based on 50 people, 7 years will allow us to get to a 3-year overlap in 7 sets. So we'll always have 7 spare sets of gear. What we lack again is the ability, we can respond to the first call, but as soon as we have a major incident, then we have to decon all of our equipment and we have to take it and remove it from service so that we can wash it and ensure that all of the contaminants that are on that gear have all been safely removed and everything is put back into service as it gets cleaned. Right now with our washer and dryer, we can only actually service 4 sets of gear. So that's washing the insides and the outsides and allowing them to dry. We can only do 4 sets every 6 hours. So we have not got enough spare gear to actually allow firefighters, if we drew a second major incident, we don't have enough spare gear to actually put firefighters in structural firefighting stuff to ensure that if a second call comes in, we can actually have skilled and ready firefighters ready to go. So we need to increase our operational capabilities and ensure that we have overall operations down the road. And having the spare gear will allow people to at least respond to more than one call and still be effective as a firefighter. So that's why we're looking to do an increase on that.
Councillor Girard.
Thank you. With regards to laundering the equipment, I believe it was it $30,000 that it cost for the commercial washer and dryer?
I'm not sure what that cost was.
It was $30,000. Have we ever looked at a system that we would actually tender out, have someone else come in and clean? I noticed that's what the City of Toronto does. It actually, there's a company in Toronto and Montreal that will actually come in. They also do all your alterations. They do everything and flip the mass. Like they would take all of what we have dirty and clean it. Is that something we've ever looked at?
So we currently do that. Anytime, so for all of our annual inspections of our protective equipment, we send it out annually for cleaning and maintenance. So whether that's stitching or anything that needs to be done, all of our gear is inspected and tested to make sure that it meets the performance objectives of each of the different types of equipment that we send. And this is an ongoing requirement that we currently do already. What we did is also looked at, is there a way that we could do an exchange? The reality is not everybody has, although there's lots of bunker gear available, it comes down to the size and fit of certain people on certain firefighters. So we have not been able to get a guarantee that we would be able to send our equipment out and get it back any faster than them finding us replacement stuff, sending it to us, taking our stuff, cleaning it, and then bringing it back at a fee. So as part of the DECON committee, we've investigated a number of options on how we can figure out what is the best method of kind of building what that resiliency. And so far, our vendor, who is one of the largest vendors of commercial cleaning and repair and inspection in the fire service, cannot commit that they would be able to give us gear in a timely manner that would allow us to make those operational decisions.
Thank you.
Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. To address number 29, which is the, 30, the station repairs, and you had mentioned about an engineering report. Have you costed out an engineering report or any idea what that may or may not end up as, dollar-wise?
I have not, no.
Okay. And the strainer that you referred to as far as pulling water out of the river, what's cost on that?
I know Lanark Highlands just bought. I can't recall. It was, as everything in the fire service, a lot more money than I thought it would be.
Okay. So that is a necessary need now?
Yes.
Okay. So out of all of that, which is significant as far as, obviously, as you're well aware, capital of $573,300, we've addressed a $90,000 tow vehicle that's out, the potential of $10,000 for the ground training work that could possibly be out, not a priority, I think, as you stated.
Correct.
And then, so the engineering report, again, I would assume, would come before we would authorize anything specifically then to station repairs. Is that how you would see it going first?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, okay. And then, of course, the strainer, which is an unknown cost at this time.
Yes, okay. And hose and valving. And
Yes, necessary yes. equipment, okay. Out of all of that, do you see any other priorities that could be possibly identified for cutting back?
All, although it would be nice to standardize our medical equipment and recognizing where we are in our overall budget constraints and appreciating the fact that I'm one department of many, we would be able to piece in our medical equipment. It would lack the standardization and the training between the two stations, but if we had to do sort of cut it in half and do it over 2 years, that's something that we would be able to accommodate to ensure at least we can move forward with the level of service.
Thank you.
Councillor Maiden.
Thank you. In speaking with the treasurer earlier, we were talking about, you know, development charges can cover the costs of growth for fire departments and so forth. Do you see this as having being the result of growth in the municipality at all, or in any portion of this? And your comment maybe for future growth, or anything that you foresee?
I can't comment on the past. It's really difficult because those that sat in the seat before me have all applied different budget realities to the ongoing situation that led us to where we are today. So I don't think it would be fair to know what their constraints were or what the budget decisions were along the path to today. Moving forward, as always, if there was an opportunity to generate revenue, this year I think I've demonstrated our ability to generate revenue for incidents that quite frankly were preventable and ought not to have occurred. And any time that we can generate revenue for the municipality as your fire service, we certainly choose to do that. And through some amendments to even the burning bylaw this spring, you'll recall the amendment was strictly around the enforcement and the cost recovery piece for it. So I would encourage, if there was development charges or anything, not from a lonely fire department perspective, but certainly from an overall generation, revenue generation perspective, the municipality may wish to look at stuff like that in the future.
Good. Mayor Lowry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have a couple comments and a couple questions. I think we're probably all a little sticker shocked with the budget that we have in front of us. I want to just provide one comment on that. When we think of the last three budgets, this and the last two budgets, I should say, this is the first one that's been actually prepared and presented by the same person. Last year's budget was prepared by Interim Chief Guyverson and presented by Chief Brown. The year before that, it had been more or less put together by Chief Meunier and presented by Chief Granahan. So this is a different budget in that it's the same person who is looking through and wanting to, you know, lead the department in the best way that he sees fit. There's been different priorities and different approaches by previous chiefs, but I think there's a few reasons why the budget we're seeing looks the way it does. Having said that, what Councillor Ferguson had alluded to, I too would like to see, you know, what are the critical pieces in here? What are your top priorities versus what are the things that could be moved to another year? I did hear you say about the medical equipment. And I appreciate as well that this is based on the bylaw that council passed indicating what our core services are. And there's going to be costs associated with core services if we're going to be providing those, if we're going to ensure that the firefighters are prepared to provide those services in a safe way for themselves and residents. So I do appreciate that this we are perhaps catching up in some ways because of the situation we've been in the last couple of years. And I do appreciate that you have a different approach than perhaps previous chiefs have, but I think that would be something that would be helpful for me if I knew out of these projects which are those ones that you'd really like to make sure do happen for 2021 and what things could have a little bit of a longer time to work their way into the budget. And the other thing I wanted to ask, Chief, is coming back to the bush truck, the bushfire truck. You had said that you'd like a decision on that soon. So if there's an opportunity to find a Canadian manufacturer to be able to do so. The next piece kind of caught me by surprise, and I understand for sure if you're wanting to put it in place, we would want it for spring 2021. Is it reasonable to try to have it for April of 2021? And this is a question I had asked in the public works side, just knowing that things are slower because of COVID. There's catch-up happening in all kinds of manufacturing areas. Is that not knowing who that Canadian manufacturer would be is also a big problem, but is that a deadline that we could actually even try to meet in getting this a piece of equipment and trying to have it, you know, in your hands for spring firefighting or bush fires?
The timeline certainly is aggressive,
and tight.
The timeline reflects when we have the bulk of our brush fires in our municipality. Springtime tends to be the worst time for brush fires and different events around. So if it would be possible to get that timeline, it would be nice to have that apparatus based on its capabilities here for our actual fire season versus in September when it would be, although used because it would be a multi-purpose vehicle, it would be used for incidents as well, but our grass fire season would be over by September when it arrived.
Mm-hmm. That's one piece when I'm looking at this and just thinking, is that actually something we'd be able to pull off? And your points about the dollar being where they are right now, that's one of the pieces I'm thinking about in terms of, you know, reasonable timelines that could be achieved. Taking the time to be able to try to find a Canadian manufacturer certainly would help with the dollar, the Canadian dollar issue. And I'm just wondering if that's actually going to line up. And I mean, we won't know until you start making phone calls and reaching out. But one of the pieces that has jumped out to me
are commercially available, already assembled, ready to go. It's just unfortunate it's an American manufacturer.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Maiden.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if we could maybe get a short report on those couple of big ticket items so that we have it kind of all laid out in writing as to why we need it and, you know, the timing, the variables that you talked about. I think that would be helpful for me just to have that all
like
set out.
Like an overview, just bullet points?
Yeah, kind of. Nothing too... the treasurer's giving her okay to that. So.
No, I'm just saying for the next...
For the next...
Not for Thursday, but...
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Councillor Ferguson?
Speaking of the bush truck, do any of our neighbors, to your knowledge, have one now? Is there any... And has the need been expressed to you by any of our neighbors? And again, I'm thinking of the opportunities of sharing as opposed to new or whatever or something like that, or even the city of Ottawa in their West Carleton area. Do they have anything resembling that?
Theirs is, what I'm going to say, a much fancier and certainly a lot more expensive version of where we would want to go. They have obviously different response requirements that they would use that apparatus for than what we would, which dictates a much fancier apparatus than what we would be seeking. So I know that Lanark Islands, it's pretty common that the style of truck is becoming more and more popular based on its versatility. As far as speaking to any of our neighbors regarding any of them, we have looked to see sort of what people are doing and trying to assess what's the best bang for the buck so that we can offer a service that is more versatile than a one truck per type of incident kind of response. I would say that Ottawa has a very, very nice truck, but frankly, the needs and circumstances of our municipality are certainly different than what we would use that truck for here. So,
McNabb Braeside may be more comparable because of obviously Carlton Place wouldn't have the need.
Yeah.
Have they anything again resembling that, do you think, or a need for it as it's been expressed?
I know that they have brush fire equipment. Mm-hmm. We did assist them with the brush fire already this spring at the just out of our boundaries on the north end. Mm-hmm. As far as what they have for apparatus, I'm not familiar.
No. Good. Thank you.
Okay. You can carry on.
My last item is recruit safety equipment. Again, we're looking to hire 6 to 8 new recruits, starting with basic training at the end of January. I'm very happy to say that we went from 6 to 36, roughly, applications that we're going to sort through and start interview processes for. In doing so, we're also looking to, because, again, we have very limited spare gear currently in our inventory, looking to buy an additional 6 to 8 sets of gear that we would put in the system, and recognizing that depending on who we hire and the size of them, we may or may not have anything to actually put people in. So we should plan on looking at what we need as far as structural firefighting gear as part of our training that starts next spring.
Okay, any questions? I guess not. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Section will take?
I don't know.
We can. I don't really have anything to offer, though. It's more, I think, the building department side that there were some questions on, and Dan is presenting on Thursday. So Anita touched on the ones for daycare, which are increasing by 2%. And the other ones that are increasing are recreation fees. And again, Calvin is here on Thursday to, if you have any questions. So I wasn't intending to go over the fees other than to say that my report's there. I've done a comparison over what the fees were for last year versus what they're proposed to be for 2021 and the reasons for the changes. So if you have questions, the appropriate staff will be in on Thursday to answer anything. Sorry, and Chad is just saying that he has one that he can speak to now.
Go ahead.
So as part of the fee for service update, one of the things that we've done is we've added an inspection fee by the fire department. I'd like to take a moment to explain what the inspection fee is. I believe as a fire safety professional, it's incumbent upon the fire service to do a fire safety inspection, and we're mandated through a directive through the Office of the Fire Marshal to conduct inspections upon complaint and request. And we are also mandated to conduct certain mandatory inspections as it relates to nursing homes, long-term care homes, retirement homes, and anything deemed to be a vulnerable occupancy under the legislation. In doing these inspections, it's also fair and reasonable that when we encounter a fire code issue, that not only do we are we mandated to follow the enforcement process and issue paperwork to anybody that's found to be in non-compliance with the fire code, We're also obligated to go and do a follow-up inspection to ensure that by the date that we came to an agreement for, that the work was actually done and that the compliance has been achieved so that we can clear the inspection out of our inspection records and show that there is in fact a minimum level of fire safety across the property that was under the inspection. Unfortunately, from time to time, we do have different residents that indicate that they will perform certain work. And then when the date comes and we do our follow-up inspection, we find that the work has not been completed. I believe as the fire safety professional that your initial inspection for assessment around compliance should be free. And I believe that if we show up and the work is done, that inspection should be free. But if we show up and you haven't done the work and we have to come back a third time, there should be a fee to cover off the inspector's time and that the municipality have some kind of cost recovery so that when we show up and things aren't done, at least we can recoup some of the costs as it relates to our municipality. So what I've proposed for our fee for service is simply that. Any time that we get out to a third, fourth, fifth inspection as it relates to compliance, that we have the ability to charge $250 for the inspection and that it helps with a little bit of a meaningful compliance carrot to say you got to get the work done when you said you were going to get it done. And if we have to come back a third time, it's going to cost you $250. So that's what we've proposed for our fee for service and the reasons why we've done that.
Okay, thank you. So we'll come back to the 2021 fees and charges on Thursday. And I need a mover and seconder for adjournment, please. Councilor Ferguson, Mayor. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. For Thursday's meeting, if it's going to be discussed in more detail, could we, and maybe it's premature, could we have something to identify cost recovery? Because certainly in this report, there is significant details as cost recovery. So what actually goes into cost recovery? And I think we spoke about that maybe the last budget meeting we had, Rhonda. Is it at what and how are the salaries captured? Is it the top end, is it the middle end, or is it the low end of salaries? And I agree also with what the fire chief has said in reference to reincurring inspection fees. And how closely would that be aligned with the building department? Would you be going accompanying them in advance or prior to or in conjunction with the third or the second, third, and fourth inspection?
Typically, compliance with the fire code is a separate entity from the building department. We encourage joint inspections, and we do work very well with our building officials to assess fire safety as part of our regulation and usually come to an agreement when our regulations and their regulations may not always align. But as far as a cost structure, I'm not familiar with how they would go about any kind of cost recovery. I would think that they should have a similar type option, but I'm not familiar with what they're allowed to do under their regulation.
Okay, any more questions or comments? Councilor Maiden.
I noticed under the fire fees, inspections for mobile canteen seasonal stand. Would a seasonal stand be like a fruit and vegetable stand? Or is it like a food vendor that's cooking food?
My understanding is it's always a food vendor that cooks food.
Oh.
Or a food vendor that has some type of licensing requirement. Most of the license applications that come into the municipal office do require fire as part of the overall assessment to sign off on those applications.
Okay, thank you.
I'll just ask the CAO, there's a couple of fire line items in other departments. Will Chief Brown be available to speak to them, such as Parks and Rec and fireproof curtains, I believe it was, for the old town hall?
I don't think they're directly fire related as such.
Okay.
maybe we could talk offline. You could point me out those things, and we could have answers for you on Thursday as part of that.
Okay.
If Chief Brown needs to feed into those, we could. But.
Good. Treasurer Whitmarsh.
I know one of the items you're discussing is the curtains at the town hall. Tiffany was speaking with Chad, and that's how that number was provided and that project included. And so I think she's well able to discuss why it's needed without the chief having to attend the meeting.
Okay. Thank you. So if there's no more questions or comments, mover and seconder for adjournment, please. Mayor Lowry, Councillor Holmes. All in favor? We are adjourned at 12:39.